Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Golden Country Radio Show. Lots of snow, and we need the moisture here, so I can't complain, and I still have my heat and water, so I have nothing to complain about those poor people in Texas. But you're joining over 31 countries across the world that are tuning in for this show. This is every Thursday night from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, and it's all about the independent country music artist. And tonight I have an incredible artist for you. This is the best kept secret. His name is Ty Avolio, and I can't wait to interview him just a few minutes from now on my show. And in the meantime, that was me and my Higher Ground band starting out the show with Down in Mississippi and Up to No Good. And this song is an original of my Defining Moments CD. This one's called Crying Kind of Man.
Don't you
Sunday, 6 a.m. And I thought he was asleep. Wrote a note down on a napkin. Said this ain't the life for me. When I look back at his front door, I saw him watching as I drove away. Now 6 months later, not a day goes by that I don't think about his face. Now it's 85 miles to Greenville, and I'm driving just as praying that you have not forgotten about your woman. Yeah, it's 85 miles to Greenville, and I hope you're still standing there in your front door. Just like you were when I left, 'cause darling, I won't be leaving anymore. In Dallas, hiding from my past. Been a month in Amarillo, trying hard not to look back. Like a child, it was what I had standing right in front of me. Now it's 85 miles to Greenville, and I'm driving just as fast as I can. Hoping and praying that you have not. Darling, I won't be leaving anymore. Just like you were when I left, darling, I won't be to the Golden Country Radio Show. That was me, Julie Richardson, singing 85 Miles to Greenville. And let me tell you the backstory of this. So I worked at Curry Ingram Academy from 2011 to 2014, and I met this incredible guy that is the tennis director for Curry Ingram Academy. But I tell you what, I didn't know his secret talent, his hidden talent is like gold. And so I didn't know he wrote songs and he sang. And so when I asked for some of his material, one of the songs was 85 Miles to Greenville, and him singing it, his voice would just like melted my heart. And I'm like, I listened to it over and over and over again. I had quite a commute from Hendersonville down to Brentwood where the school was. And, you know, I just decided at that time, I was going to record 85 Miles to Greenville and kind of try and make it my own. But I just have to share this with you before I bring on Ty Avolio. I have to share his rendition of 85 Miles to Greenville, and I think you'll understand why I fell in love with it right away. And I was just like in awe of this guy I met there that just so talented. I was like, why aren't you doing this full time? And, you know, if you've been in the music industry, you know that it's hard to be a full-time gig. It really is. But before I bring on Ty for his interview, I would like to play now his rendition. That was me recording his song, but this is his rendition of 85 Miles to Greenville. Here's Ty Avolio.
Was a Sunday 6 a.m. and I thought she was asleep. Wrote a note down on a napkin, said this ain't the life for me. When I looked back at her front door, I saw her watching as I that 6 months later, not a day goes by that I don't think about her face. Now it's 85 miles to Greenville, and I'm driving just as fast as I can. Hoping and praying that you have not forgotten about your man. Yeah, it's 85 miles to Greenville, and I hope you're still standing there at your front door. Just like you were when I left, 'cause darling, I won't be leaving. Been a week or two in Dallas, hiding from my past. Then a month in Amarillo, trying hard not to look back. Like a child I ran away, not nearly mad. All I really needed was what I had standing right in front of me. Now it's 85 miles to Greenville, and I'm driving just as fast as I can. Hoping and praying that you have not forgotten about your. It's 85 miles to Greenville, and I hope you're still standing there at your front door. Just like you were when I left, 'cause darling, I won't be leaving anymore. Just like you were when I left, darling, I won't. like you were when I left. Cause darling, I won't be leaving anymore.
That was Kaya Volio on the Golden Country Radio Show. It's all about the independent artist, and I'm super excited to have Ty with us this evening. Hi, Ty. It's been so long. Thank you for being on the show.
Hey, Julie. It's great to be
hey.
Here. I miss you.
I miss you. I can't believe it. I was thinking about it today, and it's been 6 going on 7 years since I walked away, and I'm
wow.
like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen you in that long. But I tell you, your music resonates with me, and it's you know, it's something that goes on and on with me. So I miss you, but I get to hear you through all your music, and it's just every day I'm just humbled by your talent, and I just had to have
oh,
you on my show.
That's so sweet.
No, it's true.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, I've been sharing your music each week, and I told everybody, you know, I'm gonna have Ty Avili on my show, and you know, I just want to know more about you, because I know your Curry Ingram side, but I guess I didn't know your musical side and how incredibly talented you are. And I was so blessed to be able to do your 85 Miles to Greenville. And there's so many other songs I would love to do. I could do an entire album of Ty Avili stuff and still never get it all in. But just welcome to the show. And just I know my listeners are dying to hear more about you. And of course, your music.
Well, thank you so much. Those are very kind words, and I'm glad to be here. I want to say hi here in Colorado. And shoot, fire away. I'll be happy to tell you anything you'd like to know.
Well, tell me, how'd you get your start? I mean, I know everybody's always got their influences, and, you know, they started when they were 5 playing this and that, but, like, how did you get your start? And then, more importantly, like, why aren't you doing this full time? I know Curry Ingram is an incredible job. It's a dream job. I work there, and it's an amazing place. And I can understand why you do it, but you are so talented. Like, I just pictured you on the Grand Ole Opry and other stages, like full time, you know, touring. You're that good.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. That's a loaded question, but I'll start with where I started. Just at a young, you know, I was just a curious kid. I grew up actually north of Boston, and I didn't really have much music influences in my family. Nobody played any instruments. My parents had 2 records. They had Herb Alpert record and Tom
yeah.
Jones Live. That's all I had. But I had an uncle that played harmonica, and he would come over on holidays, and he would play like Ave Maria on the
yeah.
on harmonica, and it would
You're
like
kidding.
It would tear me, yeah, it would just like tear me up, you know what I mean? And it was like at a very young age, it was like magic to me that somebody
mm-hmm.
could take something like a small harmonica and just make my heart just go right through my chest, you know. And so I think
yeah.
I've got some influence from that. And I had an older sister who had a guitar in her room, just, you know, an old
mm-hmm.
beat up nothing guitar that she never touched. And
mm-hmm.
when I was like in, you know, maybe middle school, high school, I kind of went in there and you know, commandeered it. And I didn't know how to tune it. I used to think I would just tune the turning pegs as tight as they would go. And I thought that was in tune. And, you know, back then in those days, we had these like big, cumbersome, like reel-to-reel tape recorders. And
oh,
so
yeah.
I'd find my fingers in a place where, you know, I thought it sounded good. And I would
mm-hmm.
record stuff. And then I would come back the next day, and of course it was out of tune from where it was. And I would put my fingers in that same spot, and I'd go like, oh gosh, this doesn't sound right. So eventually, like, you know, anything, the mother of invention, you just start to play by ear, you know, and you just start
right.
to figure things out. And I would put them down on these tape recorders, and I was sort of a thoughtful kid, like I wanted to express feelings. And you know, so I would write these silly little songs. And I remember one time I wrote a song, and I played it for my family, and they all kind of laughed at me. And I was like, oh, this is awful, you know. And
yeah.
So I just kept playing. I kept playing guitar, and I got you know, to the point where I actually went to school for music after in college. And it was very difficult for me because I didn't read music. I didn't really know a lot technical-wise. So when I went in there, I was completely over my head. And all these people knew how to read, and they knew classical music, and they knew all these people. And so I dropped out of that school, and I woodshedded. Like, I'm somewhat of an obsessive person. So I immersed myself in jazz and in classical and in, you know, country and just – all kinds of music, and I stayed in my room and just played guitar, you know, for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, I started getting little gigs around and playing. And at one point, I remember thinking, like, this is the first thing that I had found in my life that was, like, spiritual to me. You know what I mean? It was something that I wanted to do. And I realized you can never master this. So this will be good. All my life I can do this. You know, and that was really inspirational to me. And I remember at one point I was thinking, like, well, of course my parents were like, you'll never work, you'll never get a job, you know.
Yeah, you'll be thinking,
Yeah, well, everybody, you know, it's funny because my dad was kind of a hard guy. And I had gone to this audition with a singer. And it was for a tour, like we were going to play for, you know, several weeks during the summertime. And I grew up right near the airport, but I had never been on a plane. And
really?
So I was living on my own, and I went to the graduation party of a family friend of a kid that was like a family friend my age. He was graduating from college, and I was a bum. And I see my parents were there, and I hadn't seen them in a while. And I told my dad about this audition I had, and he was just like, you're crazy. Look at your friend Steven. He's graduating college. He's going to go and he's going to do these things. And it's funny because we had taken guitar lessons as young kids together, and he quit and I went on. And so I got this gig, and I made my dad drive me to the airport. as he drove me to the airport, it was really early in the morning, and I was getting out and had my guitar case. He kind of looked at me and he went, good job. You know, and like my dad, that was a lot, you know. And so I got on this airplane, and I lived near the airport. So I used to always go to the airport and, like, watch people come and go because it fascinated me. And when I was younger, like, air travel was not like it is today. It was more something that was, like, formal. And anyway, so I was inside this plane, and I was looking out at where I had always looked in, and I realized that this guitar. And so as the plane took off, and, you know, you look down and you see I came from like a small, very closed in type of city where most people didn't leave there. You know, they went to school, they got a job, they got a wife and a kid, and they lived in their parents' basement. That was it, you know? And so I was up in this plane looking over and seeing the horizon, you know, and I realized, this was music that did this for me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't care if I end up homeless. You can't take this away from me. This is what I want to do. And we ended up playing. We went down to, Atlanta and then Miami and then the Virgin Islands and all these different places. I played with people that didn't speak English. And, you know, it really opened my eyes up for what music could be. And so I pursued it. And I still was living in that area in Boston, and I was playing in lots of different bands. I was playing, we came close to, you know, getting some record deals, and a friend of mine who I was in a band with, we came very close with, Angelo, moved to Nashville, and he's a very good songwriter, and we were very, very good friends. And I came down, I was living in this little attic apartment that barely held all my, like, guitars and my amplifiers, and I was driving a van, and I was playing, you know, maybe, you know, three or four nights a week, and I was working a job as well, and so I went down to visit him for 2 weeks, or for whatever. Yeah, it was a friend of his was going to sublease his apartment for a month, I think it was, I forget what it was. I went down to visit him for a week. And I went down there with some ideas, and I brought the ideas with me, and I met a few different writers. He introduced me, and I came back to Boston, and, you know, some time went by, and I stayed in touch with him. And then he called me one day, and he said, "Hey, I've got some news for you. And your song is going to get on a record." And I was like, wow, that's great. And he goes, and I think it might be a single, which is like a big deal in Nashville, you know, like
people
go
totally.
There for years and try that, you know. So and later on, an apartment opened up for like 2 months in the summertime, July and August. This guy was going out and he said, you know, would you be interested in subletting it? And I was like, sure. So I went down there and I sold everything I had. I packed up a car with what I could fit in it, a beat up car that broke down. I mean, this is like out of a movie, just outside of Nashville. It broke down.
Oh, God.
And I know, and it's overheating and there's steam everywhere. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a nightmare. What did I do this for? And I eventually got the car, you know, running again. And I met my friend Angelo and his friend, Kim Ritchie, who is a great country singer. And they were waiting for me. And my song ended up being on the, you know, on the record, and it was a single. And so within a month or two that I was there, I was driving home one night. Matter of fact, I went to he was with a publishing company at Polygram. And the head of his publishing company was this guy named Daniel Hill. And I was at a party at his house with his wife at the time, whose name is Faith. She was the secretary at Polygram.
No way.
Yeah.
Faith Hill?
And she was like a pretty secretary that worked there. And you know, I was driving home from the party, and my song came on the radio. The first time I heard it on the radio, and I just thought to myself, I'm driving in Nashville listening to my song on the radio. You know, that was incredible thrill. And they eventually ended up getting a divorce, and she became Faith Hill, and my friend Angelo was, you know, wrote, and I went and I thought, well, this is the time to get a publishing deal. So I got a publishing deal with EMI, which is like, along with Warner Brothers, the biggest publishing company in the world, you know. And the next thing I know, I'm in this place, and they own all the Beatles songs, they own all of Motown, Kris Kristofferson, all these incredible songwriters. So I was writing with people, and, you know, I was doing some things, and, you know, I didn't have tremendous success, but I had. You know, I got songs cut, and I made a good living, and I was more of a – I started working a lot more, playing, like, in studios and demo sessions and stuff. And I started to play. Kim Ritchie put out a record, and I played on her record. And then Patty Griffin, who's another really good singer, was there, and I played with her for a while, and I was on her records. And then I met this guy, Chris Knight, who's an incredible songwriter from Kentucky. And he was playing in this little dive bar, and he's kind of this gruff character, but his songs are incredible. And I went up to him one night and I said, hey, would you like to have some mandolin or some dobro with this? And he was like, yeah, come back next week. I play here every Monday night. So I just started showing up and started playing with him, and he got a record deal, and I was played on his records, and I started touring with him, and we toured the whole country, Europe, and I was doing that for, you know, I don't know, 8 or 10 years. And I started to tire of it a little bit. It's grueling life. I lost my publishing deal, and I was getting beaten down. It was hard to have relationships. I was by myself, and I'd be on the road for 6 weeks, and then I'd come home for like 4 or 5 weeks with nothing. So one year, I decided, I'm tired of these guys who wake up at noontime and smoke pot and go out, you know, drink tons of coffee, neither of which I did. So I bought a mountain bike, and I bought a tennis racket. And again, I'm an obsessive guy. So I started riding around, and I found these tennis courts over in Belmont. David Lipscomb's where I lived. And they had tennis courts there, and they had a wall. And I would hit against that wall, and I would wear headphones and listen to music, and I would watch the team practice, and I just became obsessed with it. And I hope I'm not going on too long here. But
no, I love it.
I had a singer friend who took me to the YMCA in Brentwood, which has this, you know, all these indoor tennis courts. It was so fancy. I'd never seen a place like that in my life. And I thought, wow, you have to be really good to play inside, you know? And so we played there, and I was traveling to Sweden a lot at the time. And the head of the tennis department at the Maryland Farms was Swedish. So I thought, I'm going to go there one day. And I wore I had been there a lot of the times, and the guys over there gave me the local football team. They're like their soccer team shirt.
Yeah.
I put it on, and I went over to the YMCA, and some guy grabs me by the shirt. Where did you get that? And I thought, I got him. He takes me into his office. You know, he's from the exact city where I was going to a lot, Malmo.
You're
Sweden.
Kidding.
And he was saying that there's this particular dip that you can get only there and in Copenhagen. And his parents wouldn't send it to him anymore. And I was going there in about 3 weeks. And I said, I'll make you a deal. I'll bring you back a case of that dip if you take me under your wing and, you know, get me in here. And he said, deal. So I came back a month later or whenever it was with the case of dip. I gave it, took me under his wing. And he taught me a lot. He let me, he gave me a job, like a part-time job there. So when I would come home for 4 or 5, 6 weeks, I'd go there. And I'd go there all day obsessively, and I would hit with people. And as it turns out, the youngest of their pros under him was this kid that had just graduated from Vanderbilt, which is Division I, really great tennis. And he was a guitar player, and he wanted to write songs. And so I thought,
weird.
Oh, here we go. So we became best friends, and we're still best friends to this day. And he taught me everything you would know about tennis, and I taught him and how to write. You know, we recorded and did some instrumental songs and play guitar together, and I ended up getting certified because I wanted to work there, and you have to get certified. So I passed my certified test. I got the highest score that you could get, and eventually I got a job there teaching, and I loved it. I just loved it. I was outside. I was in the sun. I was with kids and normal people, and I was home a lot. And, you know, the music business is such, if you don't pursue the music business, it doesn't pursue you. Trust me.
Right.
You know, you
have
to really, really hustle. And
it's
was
a lot of work.
Tired of it. I was tired of the travel. I was tired of living out of suitcases. You know, I never made I was never successful enough that I was like on a private jet or anything. I was grinding, you know, and I loved it. And I thought to myself, I'll never stop loving music. I can maybe not appreciate the business of music, but I still love music. But then I became obsessed with this thing. So I was working there, and I would take all the quirky kids at this club. And one of the kids there was a student at this school, Korean Drum Academy, which I thought was like an Indian restaurant. I didn't know what it was, you know. And so his mom said, I want you to go over there. They just built some tennis courts over there. Of course, I went over there. The courts had been unused. They hadn't been untouched. And I taught a lesson over there, and I looked around at that campus, and I think that wild horses will not get me out of this place. I mean, it's just, it's like,
beautiful.
You know what I mean? You know what it is.
Yeah.
It's like
Hogwarts. It's beautiful.
You know, it's just
beautiful. It is.
And I met with the athletic director there at the time. He was before you. I don't think you ever met him. A great guy. And he loved me, and I really loved him. And Kathy Rayburn, was she there with
you? Yeah, she's the one that said, you know what, I believe in you. I went to her.
Horses.
Yeah, and I said, you know what, you've got a barn that's unused, kind of like you with the tennis courts. And I said, you're missing a huge opportunity here. I would love to create an equine program for your school. And she was like, okay, go for it. And I was like, you're kidding. I worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day.
That, and I remember thinking to myself, good luck. And you did. Yeah. You pulled it off.
I did it. I pulled it off. And I was like, but you know, Kathy Rayburn actually believed in me and gave me my opportunity. I was already working there in physical education and coaching and stuff. But you know, and I remember I got your old office. I was like, all right, this is Ty's old office. So, but, you know, it just took someone to believe
in
me.
I know. She did. They wanted to hire me part-time. And I went in there with this, like, 16-point power presentation. and she looked at it. And, well, it's funny because, actually, I was invited. Holly, which was her secretary, invited me to this Christmas party. a month before Christmas, whatever, and it was at Kathy Sutz. And I was supposed to have a meeting with her. And the meeting, she canceled the meeting the morning of my meeting. And I was really upset. I was like, oh, gosh. And so the next day they invited me to this Christmas party. And so I thought, I called the athletic director. I said, are you going? And he said, no, I'm not going to the party. And I thought, well, shoot, I don't know anybody. So I said to my wife, like, well, if I want this job, I have to go to this party. So we drove over. It was in a gated community. I got to the gate. And they said, they pulled out this, like, five-page list of
security
names.
Security guard.
Wasn't on it. I thought, I know. I thought, excellent. I'm not on it. I could say I tried to go here. And the lady at the booth says, nah, just go in. So I was like, all right. So we go to the party. I come to the door, Holly answers the door, and I said, you know, I'm Tivoli, I'm supposed to introduce. She jams me in this side room. And the next thing I know, I'm talking to John Ingram and Brownlee O'Curry. Brownlee O'Curry is Stephanie's father, who donated the tennis center at Vanderbilt. And, you know, I'm from the streets enough that I know the names, and I'm thinking, these are heavy people. And after we left the party, my wife was like, trust me, the Ingram family, you know what I mean? That's serious stuff.
Yeah.
And they were like, we're so happy that you're here at the school. We're so thrilled. And I'm like, I'm not even there yet, you know? And so Kathy was so nice to me, and she hired me on the spot. And I remember I quit the other place where I had a good job. And I remember that I said to the athletic director, I said, well, what happens, you know, this is a new program. You know, what happens if after a year, like, you know, not many kids sign up and it doesn't happen? And he said to me, listen, Ty, when the Ingram family goes about doing something, it's not about if it succeeds. It's about when
it
succeeds.
Absolutely.
So he said, you'll be here for as long as you want to be here. And it's been 10 years now. And
I saw that. I was like, wow.
I know. And my wife, and I thought, I don't really have any. I mean, I felt like a pretender. I thought, like, I'm not a kid that grew up playing tennis. I'm not a tennis person. My wife was like, you're the perfect person for these kids. She goes, how long do you think your friends at the other place? I said, after a week, they'd hit one of the kids over the head with a tennis racket. She goes, exactly. And it turns out I am like those kids. You know what I mean? And I fell in love with them. And as a matter of fact, I just did. And you get caught into that lifestyle, you know, and I still played in their little, you know, they'd have their music bands and Billy.
I did me and Bobby McGee that day on the stage.
So I felt
fun.
You know, I was still playing a little bit. I'm not one to really mention to people too much. But you know, it's funny. So I just loved it. It's a good job. It has health insurance, and I have a life, you know, with my wife. I'm not traveling all the time. You know, I don't think about it too much, but it's funny because in the last year or so, I've been coming back to music and, you know, writing some stuff again and recording things, and I bought, like, a recording program and a computer and some more guitars, and so it's become – And at a young age, I remember saying to myself, you will have this all your life. This is a gift. It's not music is such a thing that you can always come back to it. In other words, it doesn't need you to patronize it or constantly be it. It's like the ocean or the sky. It's always there. And when you come back, it's what it was. And so to come back to it now, only for the music, has been extremely enjoyable for me, you know, because I don't care. You know what I mean?
Right,
I'm not worried about what someone...
You're not waiting on that next
record
contract.
The music, as they say, 99% of it's rejection. And when you're on the road, the 2 hours on stage are free. You get paid for the 22 hours of, you know, Motel Sixes.
The grind.
And, you know, gas station, fast food, and all that crap that starts to, you know, the road will kill you. It's just rough, you know. And I started not to enjoy it. And my one goal in life was to not have a job and to always try to be happy. And I've managed to pull that off. And it was starting to become a job.
Ingram,
I don't feel like it's like music was for me in that it's not a job. I just love it. And I actually get excited on Sunday night. I used to get a pit in my stomach on Sunday night when I'd have to go into work on Monday, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in a gigantic nutshell, that's where I started and that's where I went with it. But along the way, I played with some great people. I have incredible memories and just beyond my wildest dreams for me. Just to hear your song on the radio is a thrill.
It is.
Earlier tonight.
I know. And, you know, that was like for me. And, you know, the first time I heard myself on the radio was in Lyons, France. And, you know, it was all this French. And then all of a sudden you hear Julie Richardson. And here's your song, you know, and I'm being played all over the world. And it's quite a thrill. And, but I'm like you, you know, but here's what I've learned in my life is that the best word for my life is and not or. I can do this and this and this and not this and or this, you know, and I think you've learned that, you know, that golden trait too, that you can do Curry Ingram and you can still dabble in your music and you know, wow people with your talent, but you didn't have to choose between one or the other. You can do it all. You can do both. And, you know, you can be successful at both. And I think a lot of people haven't learned that, you know, vocabulary to use the word and. I can teach and I can run horse programs and I can do my music and share it with people all over the world and be proud of my accomplishments. No, I'm not the next Faith Hill, but I'm not the next, you know, Carrie Underwood, but I am being listened to all over the world and people enjoy my music and that's enough for me. And I'm okay with that. You know, I have a lot of other things on my plate that I'm just as proud of and music will always be a part of my life and it will always be there. So I completely understand what you're saying. And that's why I was so excited to talk to you tonight. I guess, you know, it's funny, you work together, but you never sit down and just talk and say, gosh, you know, all I know is I had your demo CD and I was like, my God, this guy's so talented. He's so talented. Like, I can't wait to pick a song. And, you know, like I said, I'm honest. I could do an entire album of the songs that you've written. And that's why this radio show. I have been sharing your music and I've been talking about you and I was just so excited to have you on the interview tonight. And, you know, I guess if people want to get your music, like how do they do that? Is there a way that they can,
it's tough. Yeah. Huh? I don't have anything public. I don't have anything out there that I do. That's not something I've really pursued.
Okay. So they're just out of luck. They got to keep listening to my show every week to hear it.
Yes, they have to keep listening
I love it.
To your show.
That's awesome. Well, we only have so much time on the show, but I want to use the rest of the time to play a couple more songs of yours, like Is It Just Me and, you know, Don't Worry About Me. You've just got so much music. I can't wait to share it with everybody. And I appreciate, honestly, your time and your willingness to join me tonight. This has been awesome.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I think the world of you, and you're just a magic soul. You bring a lot to the world. And so just hearing from you was a great thrill. So thanks so much.
Thank you. You know what? Before you go, I do want to share one memory. I remember I was, we had an interim headmaster at Curry Ingram and, you know, the program kind of went on the side because it's all about money. You know, it comes down to the dollar, but I remember walking out of that office and I had to quit. My husband had died, number one, and I had to come back. So that was a huge force, but also, you know, you got to do what you believe in. And I remember you were the first person I came across on the path. And I remember you giving me a big hug and saying, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
And you know what? That smile and that hug, it came at the right time. And it meant the world to me. And I've never forgotten it. And I appreciate it. So thank you so much. You made a big difference.
That's great. I remember that moment. Yes.
Yeah, it was cool. It was such a tough time because, I believed I poured my heart and soul into that program. And it's still a good program. And, you know, just the timing. It's like there's no one to blame. It's just timing. the universe says, no, you got to be back in Colorado. And, you know, and, but I remember you doing that and I appreciate it. So, I just
not
wish you the best.
Not a bad place to be either.
No, it's a gorgeous place. Believe me. So
it is.
So, but thank you.
Well,
and I want to continue to play your music. Okay.
Please
take
do.
Care. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Bye. For night. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Hey, bartender, can you help me? There's something on my mind. About the girl you've seen me with in here all the time. She's out on the dance floor holding on to some new guy. Can you tell she as happy as we were every night? Does she look different to you? Are there tears in her eyes falling down on her face like they're falling on mine? Is there a hole in her heart, one missing piece? Is some part of her gone, or is it just me? Take a look. wine and a tear or two. Not a soul, and I won't be blue. I cry a little and be over you. Any day, I'll make believe that I'm doing fine. And you don't ever cross my mind. It ain't a lie if you swear it's true. I'll be fine in a tear or two.
Enjoyed that interview. It's like catching up with an old friend after many, many years have gone by. And I'm glad he's doing well, and I'm glad he's happy, and I'm glad we have his music to share with the world, because he really is a talented artist. And it's awesome to catch up with him. So thank you, Ty. I appreciate it, and I'm glad to play all your music. And I just wanted to bring attention, if you missed an episode ever of this show, just go to my website at www.julierichardsonmusic.com, navigate to the radio page, and on that page you're going to see a bunch of red buttons with different dates and names. Click on the date and the name of the person you want to hear and the show that you want to hear, and you can hear it anytime you want at your leisure for free, and I hope you'll do so. Also on that website you're going to see my music, and also my award-winning book about John A. Hobbs, The Life and Times of Music Valley's Visionary, which just came out in an audio version this week. And I'm so happy to share that with you in honor of John A.'s birthday. And he's, you know, obviously passed on, but he would have been 93 years old this year. So in honor of that, I came out with an audio version. So if you're interested in music and you want to support independent artists, just get a hold of me through my website or at Wait in the Truck. That's W-A-I-T. waitinthetruck@msn.com. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have or to help you get music from any of the artists that you've heard tonight, including Ty Avolio. And, it's important that you support our artists right now with the pandemic and everything. As you know, live music has pretty much crashed and burned. And you can keep it alive, though, and you can help the people that pour their heart and souls into it and their livelihood by purchasing their music. And, you know, Spotify, CD Baby, Reverb Nation, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, you name it. There's ways to find these people. If you can't find them, just email me at waitinthetruck@msn.com, and I'll be happy to help you out. Now, next week, you've got me, and I'll be sharing the independent music of all sorts of artists from all over the United States. And then the following week, I will have Tina White as a special guest. Her and Marty Dunn have teamed up for a duet, and they're both with Century 2 Records. And when I was looking at the charts today, they are number 50 on the top 200 country music artists this week. And that's an incredible feat. I mean, to be top 50 with this next song that I want to play for you and leave with you with, is Do You Ever Think of Me? It'll be Marty Dunn and Tina White. And again, I hope you'll tune in each week and join 31 different countries to hear the music. And thank you. Thank you so much for my regular listeners. Like my mom, Carly Hughes, and Renee Franiak and Lynn Wright And definitely my dad's always tuning in from Tampa, Florida, Jim Richardson, and just so many people. Terry and Glenda Dwyer from Lakewood, they tune in every week. And Jan Pease, and you name it. I just appreciate you, and thank you for the support. So I'm going to leave you tonight with Tina White and Marty Dunn's duet called Do You Ever Think of Me? And I hope you stay well. And I wish you luck and getting the vaccines going. And until next week, so long.
Sun will rise this morning as I wait for you to show. As your mother drops you off, my face begins to glow. It seems like a lifetime that you have been away. It's hard for a little boy to know it's only been a day. I can't help but wonder what's running through your mind. Do you ever think of me as much as I think of you?
If mom's car makes the corner, she'll drive slowly down your street. Mom will stop to brush my hair to make sure I'm looking neat. My legs begin to tremble, I'm not sure if I can stand. Then I see the smiling face of my handsome little man. Now the butterflies are loose in this heart of mine. Do you ever think of me as much as I think of you?
We were just two little children in a world of our own, hoping that someday we can make a happy home. We'd sit on the front porch where we used to play, and we would look at each other and both want to say, do you ever think of me much as I think of you? Our friendship turned to love as we left senior high.
We both saw different worlds, so we kissed and said goodbye.
I'm picking this old guitar down in Nashville, Tennessee.
I moved LA, but no one ever discovered me.
We said to each other, if we could turn back the hands of time, do you ever think of me as much as I think of you? We were just two little children. Make a happy home. We'd sit on the front porch where we used to play, and we would look at each other and both want to say, do you ever think of me as much as I think of you? Do you ever think of me as much as I